We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 82. Today we'll cover verses 1 to 38, perhaps in one class or two classes, and tomorrow we'll finish the chapter. So, verse 1. Shishikuvacha Atai Kadadvaravityam Basitaramakrishnayo Suryo Paragasumahan Asika Bakshaye Bitha. Translation, Shukadeva Goswami said, once, while Balaram and Krishna were living in Dwaraka, there occurred a great eclipse of the sun, just as if the end of Brahma's day had come. So before we discuss today's verses, what do you remember from Burijan's class on Sudama, Brahman? Yes? Yeah, the wife was distressed because of the suffering of her husband. Okay? Yes? Okay, he got purified of his aversion to this world, aversion to sense gratification. So there's two types of renounced persons. One is indifferent and one is averse. So he was in the averse category. And so that's why he was in such a condition. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, anybody else? Remember anything? Were you in Burijan's? No. Okay. Newcomer. Okay. So I have a few things which I would have said if I had been there. And so I'll read you those things. One is from Krishna book. It's actually about Parikshit Maharaj. The Parikshit in the beginning of the chapter 80, he said, an actual head is one that bows down to the Lord in his manifestations among the moving and non-moving creatures. Real eyes are those that see only the Lord. This is verse 4 of chapter 80. And actual limbs are those which regularly honor the water that has bathed the Lord's feet or those of his devotees. And so he's explaining what is life, what is real life, and what is a real alive body. If the body has a head that doesn't bow down, it's a dead body. It's just flapping, as they say in second canto. And if you have eyes that see the Lord, those are real eyes. But the Krishna book, what Prabhupada said, something very, very interesting. He talks about three classes of devotees.
Which one?
It's Krishna book, chapter 80.
Oh.
Sorry. It's in Krishna book. That's why I'm... Krishna book. Verse 4 of chapter 80. 80. Chapter 80, verse 4. Yeah, it's a statement by Parikshit Maharaj, but I thought what Prabhupada commented is very, very interesting. He said that the Lord is represented in everyone's heart as a fact, and therefore the highly advanced devotee offers his respects to every living entity, considering the body is the temple of the Lord. So he divides into three classes, because this is describing actually a very pure devotee. So here he says, if someone sees the Lord in the heart, he's a high-class devotee, and he bows down to every living entity. He offers respects to all living entities. A second-class devotee, he says, but it is not possible for all men to come to that stage of life immediately, because that stage is for the first-class devotee. The second-class devotee can consider the Vaishnavas, or the devotees of the Lord, to be representatives of Krishna. And the devotee who is just beginning, the neophyte, third class, can bow his head before the deity in the temple. So I thought that was quite interesting, that the neophyte, he sees the deity, the second class sees the Vaishnavas as representatives of Krishna, and the first class sees everyone as having Krishna in a temple of Krishna. So I thought that was an interesting comment, which you may not have heard, so I'd like to bring it up. So now there's another Nectar of Devotion quote for verse 23 of chapter 80. The quality of Krishna number 40, controlled by love. So this quality of Krishna, that he's controlled by the love of his devotees, is shown in the Leela of Sudama Vipra. Welcome, Sudama Vipra. So here in Nectar of Devotion it says, Krishna becomes obliged to the loving spirit of the devotee and not exactly to the service rendered. So we have to, when we do our service, it's not, oh, I'm doing this service, it's such a wonderful service, Krishna must acknowledge, must reciprocate. It's the spirit. It's the loving spirit. So Sri Rupa Goswami, no one can serve Krishna completely. He is so complete and self-sufficient, he has no need of any service from the devotee. It is devotee's attitude of love and affection for Krishna that makes him obliged. So the nice example was manifested when Sudama Vipra went to the palace. He had been a class friend of Krishna's. Due to his poverty, he was induced by his wife to see Krishna to request some aid. When Sudama Vipra reached Krishna's palace, Krishna received him very well. Both he and his wife washed the feet of Sudama Vipra. Remembering his loving affairs with Sudama in their childhood, Krishna began to shed tears while receiving him. So what is this an example of? Remember the quality of Krishna I just told you? Controlled by love. Krishna is controlled by love. This is the Nectar of Devotion, chapter 22, quality number 40. So Prabhupada was describing in one lecture that how the brahmana, they refuse unnecessary necessities of life. Sometimes they look very poverty-stricken, but they're not like that. They're not poor. They're very rich. So then Krishna showed everyone that he was not poor. He gave him everything. He gave him wealth, which is greater than Indra. So then in chapter 81... Now, did you remember anything, Adi Purush, from Sudama Vipra's story? As a blessing. That's what he wanted from Krishna. Sakya, or general Sakya, or servitude. Okay.
Maitri, Sakha, Mitra, or Dasya.
Okay, Maitri, Sakha, Mitra, or Dasya.
It almost sounded as if he...
Okay, he didn't send him on the chariot because the dust of his feet would purify...
The city of
Dwarka.
Because everything belongs to Krishna.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, I know you can give a nice lecture, but just the points. Okay. Yes, you can tell about this in your lecture. Yes. Krishna magnifies even the smallest service.
And that one
issue of Krishna. Wow. I picked up one thing from verse 34, actually. It's it says that the cloud waits till nighttime. What was it? Oh, no, that was, 34. Just like a merciful rain cloud. So in the Krishna book, or even in the purport, it said the cloud waits till nighttime when the farmers are asleep because they're ashamed that the rain is too insignificant a gift to give in return for the abundant offerings that the farmers give. So Krishna, he also had that feeling, so he didn't give him immediately. So he let him go home and then see, and he was feeling, actually, I don't have enough to give, but at least I can give him something better than Indra and Brahma and these people. But some people, they don't appreciate. So in Krishna book, Prabhupada was saying, the Lord fulfills the desire of everyone according to his position, yet one who is not in Krishna consciousness considers all the gifts of the Lord to be less than his desire. And so that's the problem with nowadays. People, they don't have gratitude for what Krishna gives. I had one more thing. Oh, yeah. How when Krishna ate... Krishna ate the palm full. He's of grains of flat rice. He said, this will satisfy not only me, but also the entire universe. So when we offer to Krishna, it benefits the whole universe. And that reminded me of one of the marks on Krishna's, Radharani's lotus feet, the sacrificial altar. When you sacrifice your mind to Krishna and Krishna consciousness, then the whole universe is nourished. Nourished, yes. You sacrifice your mind. The mind is a very big thing to sacrifice. It's very difficult to control the mind or give the mind. So today we're studying about Kurukshetra. There was an eclipse. We also had an eclipse recently. It wasn't a full eclipse, but a minor eclipse. But here it seems to be that if you have a full eclipse, then it's just like at the end of Brahma's day. If there is a full eclipse, it's the same thing that happens. And on this occasion, everybody went to Kurukshetra. Purport. As Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out, the words atha and ekada are commonly used in Sanskrit literature to introduce a new topic. So we went from Sudama Vipra, now we're going to Kurukshetra. And because we can't somehow... Shukadeva always remembers the residents of Vrindavan. And now especially in this meeting of Kurukshetra, we will see how the residents of Vrindavan are expressing their feelings of happiness and also unhappiness that Krishna was away for so long. So here they especially indicate the reunion of the Yadus and Vrishnis at Kurukshetra is being narrated out of chronological sequence. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains in his Vaishnava Toshini commentary, the events of this 82nd chapter occur after Lord Baladev's visit to Braj, chapter 65, before Maharaj Yudhisthira's Rajasuya sacrifice, chapter 74. So after Balaram's visit sometime, then that's when they all went to Kurukshetra, because everyone was there in the Rajasuya sacrifice. At the eclipse at Kurukshetra, all the crews are there and they're all happy. So therefore it must have happened before the battle of Kurukshetra, and it was even before the Rajasuya sacrifice. It was quite soon after Krishna went to Dwaraka that he met the residents of Vrindavan. It's because all the crews, including Dhritarashtra, Yudhisthira, Bhishma, and Drona, met in friendship and happily shared the company of Sri Krishna. At the Rajasuya Yajna, on the other hand, Duryodhana's jealousy against the Pandavas became irrevocably inflamed. So it was at that point that Duryodhana really got envious of the Pandavas and they had the gambling match. Soon after this, Duryodhana challenged Yudhisthira and his brothers to the gambling match, in which he cheated them of their kingdom and exiled them to the forest. Right after the Pandavas returned from exile, the great battle of Kurukshetra took place, during which Bhishma and Drona were killed. So it's not logically possible for the solar eclipse at Kurukshetra to have happened after the Rajasuya sacrifice. So in Krishna Sandarbha, again, Jiva Goswami gives a sequence of events. First, there was this Kurukshetra eclipse. Then Rajasuya sacrifice, Shishupala killed. Then the gambling match. Then killing of Shalva. And then Dantavakra, and then the Pandavas were exiled. Then Lord Balaram, he's got Lord Balaram after. And then the Kurukshetra War. Oh yeah, Lord Balaram went on his tour of the holy places. Yes, that happened after. And then the Kurukshetra War was fought, and Duryodhana was killed. From this sequence of events, we can conclude the journey of the residents of Vrindavan to Kurukshetra happened not very long time after the killing of Kamsa. So he did see the residents of Vrindavan. And of course, we have heard how he was going and coming from Vrindavan also during all these times. So it was not that he didn't visit. He did visit Vrindavan. But now, of course, after that, it was a long time he was living in Dwaraka. When he was living in Mathura, then he did visit. But then once he went to Dwaraka, then that was it. And it took a long time before he would visit again. So verse 2, knowing of this eclipse in advance, O King, many people went to the holy place known as Samanta Panchaka in order to earn pious credit. Purport. Vedic astronomers of 5,000 years ago could predict eclipses of the sun and moon just as well as our modern astronomers can. The knowledge of the ancient astronomers went much further, however, since they understood the karmic influences of such events. So not only were the Vedic scientists astronomers, they were astrologers at the same time. They were both. So they could say that, you know, this will be an inauspicious time. Watch out. So the eclipse is generally inauspicious. Solar and lunar eclipses are generally very inauspicious with certain rare exceptions. So what is a certain rare exception to this rule of inauspicious eclipses? Lord Chaitanya's appearance. Very good. It's coming up soon. Yes, so that was an auspicious eclipse. Everyone was chanting Hare Krishna and Lord Chaitanya appeared during that, right at moonrise. Just as the otherwise inauspicious Ekadashi day becomes beneficial when used for glorification of Lord Hari, so the time of an eclipse is also advantageous for fasting and worship. So I thought that's very an interesting point, that things that we generally think are inauspicious in this world, if we use them for chanting and worship, they become auspicious. So like this last eclipse, I believe there was a kirtan for 5 hours or 3 hours in the temple during that eclipse. And so they turned something inauspicious into a very auspicious occasion. The holy pilgrimage site known as Samantapagacha's Panchka is located at Kurukshetra, the sacred ground of the Kurus, where the Kuru king's predecessors performed many Vedic sacrifices. The Kurus were thus advised by learned Brahmins this would be the best place for them to observe vows during the eclipse. Long before their time, Lord Parshuram had done penance at Kurukshetra to atone for his killings. Samantapanchaka, the five ponds he dug there, were still present at the end of Dwarapayuga as they are even today. Anybody bathe in Samantapanchaka? You did? No. Samantapanchaka. That is the five lakes of Parashuram. Okay. After ridding the earth of kings, Lord Parashuram, the foremost of warriors, created huge lakes from the king's blood at Samantaka, Panchka. Although he's never tainted by karmic reactions, Lord Parashuram performed sacrifices there to instruct people in general. Thus he acted like an ordinary person trying to free himself of sins. From all parts of Ardvarsh, a great number of people now came to the Samanta Panchaka on pilgrimage. Odisan Abharata, among those arriving at the holy place were many Vishnis, such as Gada, Pradyumna, and Samba, hoping to be relieved of their sins. Akrura, Vasudev, Ahuka, and other kings also went there. Aniruddha remained in Dwaraka with Suchanda, Shuka, and Sarana to guard the city together with Kritavarma, the commander of their armed forces. Purport. According to Srila Vishnu Chakravarti, Sri Krishna's grandson Aniruddha remained in Dwaraka to protect the city because he is originally Lord Vishnu's manifestation as the guardian of the spiritual planet, Shweta Dweep. Now, what does that have to do with him staying in Dwaraka? Since he's the guardian of Shweta Dweep, I guess he's the guardian of Dwaraka. He remained in Dwaraka. So Aniruddha is Kshirdakshai Vishnu, or, yes, the last one. Dwaraka is okay. Now in Krishna book, Prabhupada explains that it's stated in Isha Upanishad, Vishnu Tattva cannot be contaminated by any sinful activity. And although Lord Parashuram is fully powerful and uncontaminated, in order to exhibit ideal character, he performed great sacrifices at Samantapanchaka to atone for his so-called sinful killing of the Kshatriyas. By his example, Lord Parashuram established the killing art, although sometimes necessary, is not good. Lord Parashuram considered himself culpable for the sinful killing of Kshatriyas. Therefore, how much more culpable are we for such abominable, unsanctioned acts. So from time immemorial, the killing of living entities is prohibited all over the world. So now they have wars and they kill people, but they never think that I should do some atonement for this killing. It would never enter their mind, their brain.
This is from Krishna book?
Krishna book, yes. That the killing is not good. He said so-called sinful killing that Lord Parashuram did wasn't sinful. He, just like Lord Balaram killed Ramaharshana, and so he also set the example that I must do some atonement. What shall I do? You tell me. I won't say what atonement. He didn't, even though he's the Supreme Lord, he didn't say, I will do this atonement. No. He asked the sages, you please tell me what I should do now. How I shall atone for the killing of Ramaharshana. And so this is Krishna. This is our Vishnu Tattva. Even though they have to kill so many people sometimes, still they feel themselves contaminated. And also just to be an example for the people. Verse 7-8, the mighty Yadavas passed with great majesty along the road. So now they're going from Dwarka to Kurukshetra, right? All the way from Dwarka. How far is that? It's very far, yeah. Kurukshetra is in UP. Okay. From Gujarat. Must have taken them a long time. They're attended by their soldiers who rode on chariots rivaling the airplanes of heaven, on horses moving with a rhythmic gait, and on bellowing elephants as huge as clouds. Also with them were many infantrymen as effulgent as celestial vidyadharas. The Yadavas were so divinely dressed, being adorned with gold necklaces and flower garlands and wearing fine armor, that as they proceeded along the road with their wives, they seemed to be demigods flying through the sky. They were on the road, though. They weren't flying. It says they were on... I mean, when I first read that, I thought, are they flying like the demigods? No. But they are on the road. It says along the road with their wives. So imagine that scene. Hundreds and thousands or even millions of people wearing gold necklaces. Even you're lucky to see one person wearing a gold necklace nowadays. Flower garlands, armor. At Samanta Panchaka, these saintly Yadavas bathed, then observed a fast with careful attention. Afterward, they presented brahmanas with cows bedecked with garments, flower garlands, and gold necklaces. In accordance with scriptural injunctions, the descendants of Vrishni then bathed once more in Lord Parshram's lakes and fed first-class brahmanas with sumptuous food. All the while they prayed, may we be granted devotion to Lord Krishna. Krishna no bhaktir astu. So this is the prayer you can pray during an eclipse. May we be granted devotion to Lord Krishna. This is what they prayed during the eclipse. So next time, you know what to ask for. May we be granted devotion to Lord Krishna. Krishna no bhaktir astu. Okay. The second bath marked the end of their fasting on the following day. In Krishna book, Prabhupada says, after the eclipse, all the members again took their baths in the lakes created by Lord Parashram. So it seems they took one bath before or during and one bath after the eclipse. I know my clinging lady on the eclipse day, she said, now I have to go and have a bath after the eclipse in the Jamuna. So even now, they still follow that here in Vrindavan. Then they sumptuously fed the Brahmins with first-class cooked food, all prepared in butter. Now, this is a very interesting comment by Srila Prabhupada from Krishna book about what is cooked food and what is raw food. What is raw food, actually, in our estimation? Huh?
Boiled.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was like fruits and nuts and vegetables. I mean, yeah, boiled. Huh?
Salad,
yes, salad. No, yes, you're right, it's boiled. According to Vedic system, there are two classes of food, One is called raw food, other is called cooked food. Raw food does not indicate raw vegetables and raw grains, but food boiled in water, whereas cooked food is made in ghee. Chapatis, dal, rice, and ordinary vegetables are called raw foods, as are fruits and salads. But puris, kachoris, samosas, sweetballs, and so on are called cooked foods. So I think most of us have been living on raw foods. If we don't have all these things every day, and when you get old, you can't eat these kachoris, samosas, sweetballs. These things are off your diet because your liver's finished, your digestion. So raw food is actually rice, dal, chapatis. All these things are raw. And vegetables boiled vegetables. Cooked food is made in ghee. Ordinary vegetables are raw foods. All the brahmanas invited on that occasion by the members of the Yadu dynasty were fed sumptuously with cooked food. Kachoris, samosas. Good to be a Brahmin in those days. The ceremonial functions performed by the members of the Yadu dynasty externally resembled the ritualistic ceremonies performed by the Karmis. When a Karmi performs some ritualistic ceremony, his ambition is sense gratification. Good position, good wife, good house, good children, or good wealth. But the ambition of the members of the Yadu dynasty was different. Their ambition was to offer Krishna perpetual devotion with faith. All the members of the Yadu dynasty were great devotees. As such, after many births of accumulated pious activities, they were given the chance to associate with Lord Krishna. In going to take their baths in the place of pilgrimage at Kurukshetra, observing the regative principles during the solar eclipse, or in feeding the Brahmins. In all their activities, they simply thought of devotion to Krishna. Their ideal worshipful Lord was Krishna and no one else. So they had many different activities that they were doing. They had to fast, they had to feed the Brahmins, they had to do some sacrifices. But the thing that went throughout all these activities was, this is for Krishna. This is for Krishna's pleasure. And so how much of our day are we acting consciously for the pleasure of Krishna? We may be doing so many things. We may be, riding our bicycle, or we may be going shopping, or we may be doing, but are we thinking, okay, this is for the pleasure of Krishna? I think that is the point here about the Yadus. They're living with Krishna, and that's how they're thinking. So if you really want to live with Krishna, you can do so even in this life, but that's, you have to think like that. That, okay, this is for their pleasure, Radha and Krishna's pleasure. I'm going to the temple just to please them. I'm going to Mangalarti just to please them. And so this is the Anukulyena, Anushayanam Bhakti, that favorable, that we're thinking, I must please Krishna. And they are the examples. But here, like it describes it in the purport, compares them, or it was Krishna book actually, comparing them to the Karmis. And I was interesting because I'm researching Queen Kunti, and it was described that she's an incarnation of the success potency of the Lord. And if you look at her life, you think, wow, what a hard life for the success potency of the Lord. It's very hard. And then I was looking up what is the idea of success. I looked in the dictionary and it said, social position, fame, wealth. This is success. And then it had another definition. It said, this is archaic. This is old-fashioned. Good or bad outcome of your work. So that's for before. But their main idea was that it's this material things, that means you're successful. And so if people looked at the life of Kunti and the Pandavas, they would not see a very successful life. Of course, in the end, it was successful. And during the Rajasuya sacrifice. But in between, so many problems occurred. And so it's not always so easy. So verse 11, then with the permission of Lord Krishna, their sole object of worship, the Vrishnis ate breakfast and sat down at their leisure beneath trees that gave cooling shade. So after eating siesta, the Yadavas saw that many of the kings who had arrived were old friends and relatives, the Matsyas, Ushinaras, Kaushayas, Vidarbhas, Kurus, Shinjayas, Kambojas, Kaikayas, Madras, Kuntis, and kings of Arnata and Kerala. He also saw many hundreds of other kings, both allies and adversaries. In addition, my dear King Parikshit, they saw their dear friends, Nanda Maharaj, and the cowherd men and women who had been suffering in anxiety for so long. So we've been hearing, even though we're in Dwarka Lila, we've been hearing of the anxiety of the residents of Vrindavan. Who can give me an example of their anxiety? How are they living in Vrindavan now, away from Krishna? Yes, Adi?
They didn't decorate their bodies, they didn't take care of their houses.
Their houses are unswept and full of cobwebs. Their bodies are unclean. They're very skinny. And Prabhupada said, they're perpetually crying, all of them. They're all crying. And this is many, many years. Krishna moved to Dwarka when 25 years after he left Vrindavan, I think it was 25 years, and he moved to Dwarka. So it's a long time that they've been living like this in separation from Krishna, only maintaining their lives because Krishna promised, I will come back. So now they're seeing Krishna. Verse 14, as the great joy of seeing one another made the lotuses of their hearts and faces bloom with fresh beauty, the men embraced one another enthusiastically. With tears pouring from their eyes, the hair on their bodies standing on end, and their voices choked up, they all felt intense bliss. So this is not with Krishna, it's with the Vaishnavas that they're having these ecstatic symptoms. It's with other Vaishnavas. Of course, they're seeing them as family members. They are related, Nanda Maharaj and the Yadus. I believe the grandfathers were from the same father, perhaps. I can't remember exactly. Parjanya and the other one. The women glanced at one another with pure smiles of loving friendship. And when they embraced, their breasts smeared with saffron paste pressed against one another as their eyes filled with tears of affection. They all then offered obeisances to their elders and received respect in turn from their younger relatives. After inquiring from one another about the comfort of their trip and their well-being, they proceeded to talk about Krishna. So this is these are the activities of the Vaishnavas. What to talk about? Well, of course, they did ask, how was your trip and how did it go? And then, Krishna. So whoever wrote the purport said, these are the special dealings of Vaishnavas. Even the family entanglements that delude ordinary conditioned souls are no encumbrance for those whose family members are all pure devotees of the Lord. Now, that is a nice point. Impersonalists who have no capacity for appreciating these intimate dealings, they have no capacity, since their philosophy condemns as illusory any kind of personal emotional existence. So this is a really good point, because not only they don't appreciate, they have no capacity for appreciating, but they think it's completely maya, and they're averse to all these things, these emotions. When followers of impersonalism pretend to understand the loving relationships of Krishna and his devotees, they only create havoc for themselves and whoever listens to them. So who are these people that are being referred to here, who pretend to understand the loving relationships of Krishna, who are creating havoc for themselves and everyone? Some of them are sahajas, but this is mayavadis. Who are they? Bhagavad saptas. The mayavadis who do Bhagavad saptas. They do Bhagavad saptas, and then they go, break the four wicked principles, some of them, because they think they are Krishna. Now I've talked about my activities. Everybody should appreciate what my lila. And so in Krishna book, Prabhupada says, due to such heart-to-heart embracing, torrents of tears glided down their cheeks. The juniors were offering obeisances to the elders, and the elders were offering blessings to the juniors. They thus welcomed one another and asked about one another's welfare. Ultimately, however, all their talk was only of Krishna. All the neighbors and relatives were connected with Lord Krishna's pastimes in this world, and as such, Krishna was the center of all their activities. Whatever activities they performed, social, political, religious, or conventional, were transcendental. Okay, so let us see. Pretend that you're the Brijbasis or the others. What would you say to the other group? If you're the Brijbasi or you're the Yadus, what will you say about Krishna? They're talking about Krishna now, so imagine that you're there. You're one of them. I mean, what would you actually say about Krishna? Prashanta?
I think Mother Yashoda would ask, what does he eat?
Mother Yashoda would say, what is he eating? What are you eating now? What does he eat? Yeah. You're so skinny. I have to feed you. Yeah.
I still remember us.
Gopis are asking, you remember us?
Poor girls from the village.
Poor girls. Yeah. What would the Yadus talk about? Oh, yeah.
What was he when he was a child?
Yeah, what was he like when he was a child? What did he do? And, yes, Abai? He's doing pretty well for himself, isn't he? They would say. He looks pretty, you know, he used to be a simple coward boy. Now he's got all this, you know, armor and gold and all these things. Adi Purush?
That was might have asked, how did he fight with the demons?
The others might have asked the Brijbasis, how did he fight with the demons?
Yeah. How did he learn the martial arts?
How did he learn these martial arts? And he was just a small boy. How is it possible? Yes. Yes?
Then Mayav would say, now we'll never leave again.
Now don't, right. Okay, now we're here. In fact, Nanda Maharaj is going to there just for the purpose of bringing him back. He's not thinking he's going to go there and see Krishna and go back. He's thinking he's going to go there and see Krishna and bring him back. And that we'll hear about tomorrow. Now he kept prolonging and prolonging. To 3 months he stayed there in Kukshetra. I mean, one eclipse is one day, right? I mean, you go, you see the eclipse, you're finished. But 3 months, I say, I'll go tomorrow, I'll go tomorrow, I'll go this afternoon, no, I'll go tomorrow. Just to prolong. Because he was feeling, oh, Vasudeva will feel bad when I take Krishna back. So, yes. Maybe. I don't know if they would talk to Balaram or not, if Krishna's there. I don't think they would. Yes, Prashanta. Gopis were wishing he would come back. I mean, all the Brijbasis had their mission to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan. And tomorrow, yes, we will hear how the heart of the Gopis, the heart of Radharani, and which is embodied in the verse 48, when they respond to Krishna. And the hidden message in that verse is bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan. So tomorrow we'll go into detail. Today we won't hear about the gopis meeting Krishna. We'll hear about Nanda and Yashoda meeting Krishna. And the gopas weren't there. They all stayed back to protect Braj. Somehow they didn't come. Only the gopis came, and mothers and fathers, Yashoda and Nanda. So what else? Perhaps the Brijabasis would ask, well, what has Krishna been doing all these years? And we will see it. Actually, chapter 83, when the ladies get together, Draupadi gets together with the queens, and she'll ask, well, how did Krishna marry all of you? And that'll be chapter 83. Then that's one huge conversation that goes on, and all the queens will be telling how Krishna got married to them. So that's one conversation that's actually here in the Bhagavatam for us to see. But they may be asking, well, what has Krishna been doing in Dwaraka? Tell us, how is he? Yes, as you said, how is he eating? How are these things? Okay, so Krishna book. The real elevation of human life rests on knowledge and renunciation. As stated in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, devotional service rendered to Krishna automatically produces perfect knowledge and renunciation. So which verse is Prabhupada paraphrasing from first canto? Vasudeva Bhagavati. Bhakti Yoga Payochita Janayatya Shivayaragyam Gyanam Chayatahitakam. Yes, causes knowledge and renunciation come just by bhakti. And I've been studying Uddhava Gita, and that's the whole Uddhava Gita is about how just all you need is bhakti. And then another point in there is you are not this body over and over, and you'll be convinced by the time you finish hearing Uddhava Gita. You're not this body, and you're not this mind. And the mind is the cause of all trouble. So this is so far what I've picked up from Uddhava Gita. And bhakti is the highest in bhaktis, and the highest bhakti is the gopis. So Krishna book, the family members of the Yadu dynasty and the cowherds of Vrindavan had their minds fixed on Krishna. That is a symptom of perfect knowledge. Because their minds are always engaged in Krishna, they are automatically freed from all material activities. This stage of life is called Yukta Vairagya, as enunciated by Sri Rupa Goswami. Knowledge and renunciation, therefore, do not mean dry speculation and renunciation of activities. Rather, one must start speaking and acting only in relationship with Krishna. So Prabhupada made a point about all these emotions that everyone was experiencing. The Mayavadis, they don't want to have emotions. The impersonalists don't want. They're afraid. They don't even dare to think of the pastimes of Krishna in the spiritual world. They cannot imagine that you can have knowledge and renunciation along with activities in this world. And so this is so we are getting a glimpse of some of these activities and the relationships between devotees in the spiritual world. Verse 17, Queen Kunti met with her brothers and sisters and their children, and also with her parents, her brothers' wives, and Lord Mukunda. While talking with them, she forgot her sorrow. Yes, so this is going on. Meanwhile, still Duryodhana is trying to kill the Pandavas in so many ways. They just escaped from the house of Lak, and they married Draupadi. It is explained, even the constant anxiety of a pure devotee, apparently just the opposite of the impersonalist shanti, can be an exalted manifestation of love of God, as exemplified by Srimati Kunti Devi, the aunt of Lord Krishna and mother of the Pandavas. So this is a very interesting statement that I think we should discuss. The constant anxiety of a pure devotee can be an exalted manifestation of love of God. How is that? How can the constant anxiety of a pure devotee be an exalted manifestation of love of God? That is, yes?
They will be separated from Krishna.
Okay, there's the anxiety of separation from Krishna. Yeah? Is it Prashant?
Devotees are in anxiety about Krishna.
About Krishna.
And they're in anxiety about Krishna's mission.
Krishna's mission, yes.
Anxiety
about the mission. Anxiety, yes. Lord Chaitanya has anxiety to deliver Adipurush. Right. Okay, so that's a really interesting statement that Adi Purusha has made, that their anxiety is shanti in regards to the material world. Their spiritual anxiety is actually shanti for them. It's actually peace. As we were discussing before, it's not the materialists. They want to get rid of the troubles. They want to have no troubles in life. But the devotee, and so then they call that peace when there is a smooth sailing, that's peace. But for the devotees, peace means even if the boat is rocking, even there's not smooth sailing, you're peaceful because you have a relationship with Krishna. And anxiety for Krishna is spiritual anxiety. So this anxiety is in connection with Krishna, and it makes them closer to Krishna. Just like Kunti said, let the calamities come, because then I will see you. When in the calamity, she's always thinking of Krishna. Much more concentrated. I think we even have that experience. When trouble comes, then we think more about Krishna. if you're in an airplane that starts to dive, or you get into turbulence, or even, yes, anything like that happens, then more anxiety. I mean, more close to Krishna. You think of Krishna more. Okay, now, Krishna, you're the only one. You're all I have now. Nobody's going to help. Nobody will help me in this condition. Yes. Okay. Yes, Nanda, did you have your hand up? Oh, okay, I thought I saw you. Okay, so verse 18, Queen Kunti said, "My dear, respectable brother," so she's speaking to Vasudeva, "I feel that my desires have been frustrated, because although all of you are most saintly, you forgot me during my calamities." So she's expressing her heart I'm having all these troubles, but you don't talk, you don't phone me. I mean, they didn't have phones, but you don't, talk to me. "Friends and family members, even children, brothers and parents, forget a dear one whom Providence no longer favors." Purport, Shishida Swami and Vishnu Chakravati Thakur both comment that Kunti does not blame her relatives for her suffering, so she calls them most saintly persons and alludes here to her own bad fortune as a cause of her unhappiness. So yes, it's not your fault. She says, it's not your fault. I know you also had problems. So Prabhupada often talks about this, that you lose your money, then your family is no longer friendly with you, and then your friends reject you. So I just brought a little poem from Srila Prabhupada about this point. "A list of names. Seeing that I am penniless, everyone has now abandoned me. My own family, my other relatives, and even my so-called friends. This situation is indeed miserable, but it simply amuses me. I sit alone and laugh." Well, this is Prabhupada's reaction to everyone rejecting him. And I guess there was a certain point of his life when this happened. "In this mundane material world, who are my loved ones? Where have my affectionate father and mother gone now? And where are all my elders and other relatives who are my own folk? Who will give me news of them now? I ask you, tell me who. All that is left of this so-called family is a list of names." So Kunti was feeling alone. And Prabhupada was feeling alone, but he was laughing. He was laughing, yes. This is material world. So we know that Krishna did remember Kunti. Remember, what did Krishna do to remember Kunti when he was in Dwarka and she was in Hastinapur? What did Krishna do? He sent Akrura to find out what was going on. And she was telling everything that was happening, how Dhritarashtra, the sons, were always planning to kill them. And she was like a poor, innocent animal in the midst of several tigers, a deer in the midst of tigers. And she was praying to Krishna in that time. She was saying, "My dear Krishna, you are the supreme mystic, super soul of the universe, the real well-wisher of the whole universe. My dear Govinda, this time you are far away from me, yet I pray to surrender unto your lotus feet. I am grief-stricken with my 5 fatherless sons. I can fully understand, but for your lotus feet, there is no shelter or protection. Your lotus feet can deliver all aggrieved souls because you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can be safe from the clutches of repeated birth and death by your mercy only. My dear Krishna, you are the Supreme Pure One, Super Soul, Master of all yogis. What can I say? I can simply offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Accept me as your fully surrendered devotee." So we find that in many prayers of devotees that they say, "I am your surrendered soul." It's important to say that. Lord Ram says, if anyone says that, immediately I will give him full protection. And the kings, when they were in the prison of Jarasandha, they also said, "We are now your surrendered devotees. So therefore, please liberate us." So when you pray to Krishna, it's a good thing to say, I am your surrendered devotee. Please use me as your instrument. So verse 20, Shivasudeva said, Dear sister, do not be angry with us. We are only ordinary men, playthings of fate. Indeed, whether a person acts on his own or is forced by others, he is always under the Supreme Lord's control. Harassed by Kamsa, we all fled in various directions, but by the grace of Providence, we have now finally been able to return to our homes, my dear sister. Interesting how they both talk about Providence and fate. But actually, Providence is Krishna. Krishna killed Kamsa, and then they were able to return to their homes. It's Krishna. And the gopis will actually bring that point up tomorrow. That Krishna will say, oh, it's providence, it's fate. He brings people together, he separates them. And he said, well, yeah, we know, but we know who providence is. It's you. You're the Supreme Lord. And so, yeah, it's providence. So here they're talking, it's providence. I guess you can blame it on providence. But actually, they're saying, by the grace of providence. And what did Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati say when he would make a plan? Krishna willing. Krishna willing. So Vasudev is saying, we were in jail. What can we do? You know, I mean, what do you expect? We just got out, you know, a few years ago. Of course, Krishna did not forget Kunti. And he did send Akura. And he was always, when they went in, of course, later on, when the Pandavas go into exile, he'll be always with them whenever they need his help. Okay, so we'll stop here. Any questions or comments? We'll finish the verses after the break. We have some more verses. Any, yes, Adi Purush?
Vasudev calls his sister mother.
He calls her mother Amba. Acha, interesting. Yeah, Prabhupada always criticized these groups. So he made the point, it's interesting that Vasudev calls his sister Amba, or mother. Maybe she's older than him. Older sister, too. But, yes, even, who was that? His daughter was leaving and he was calling her Amba, too.
Swayambhuvamana.
When he was giving Devahuti.
The gopis also in
Yugalagita. Gopigita. Yes. So he's calling her mother. You're my mother. And Prabhupada criticized those groups in India that call everyone sister instead of mother. He says, no, it's mother, not sister. They're called Benji. Yeah, right. But they're not thinking sister. They call you sister, but they're not really thinking sister. They're thinking. Acha, even their sisters they call Ma. Yeah, when I was living in the village in Goa, I was known as Govinda's mother, Govinda Ma. They don't call you Mataji or any, they just say Govinda's mother. They call you by the name of your children. So that's how all the women's names were, not their own names, they were the names of their Govinda Ma, or this one Ma, this one Vrinda Ma. Mother of Vrinda, mother of Govinda. So that's how it used to be, actually. Yeah, everywhere, the culture was that, yeah, you didn't even say the name of the lady. You just said the name of, you referred her to the children. So it was. You felt good. I felt good because you're attached to your son, and someone remembers your son, and you think, oh wow, yes, Govinda, Govinda's mother. I like that. Yeah. Yeah, it's not the culture. It's not the culture. Yeah, the culture was the children's. You're by the children's name or the husband's name if you have no children.
Or is it glorifying and knowledge is revealed?
Yeah, both. Yeah, we are purified. Actually, there's some really nice verses that can clarify for this just for you in Adi Lila. I think it from in the 90s, like the end of the 90s to the 100. The process is described, actually, how we get, how bhakti comes. And the beginning is that Lord Chaitanya Nityananda appear in your heart. And after Lord Chaitanya Nityananda appear in your heart, they reveal the two types of Bhagavatas, and that is the Devotee Bhagavat and Srimad Bhagavat. So first, Gaur-Nitai appeared. They're like, there's a verse, Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodadao Gauradai Pushpavantao Chita Shandao Tomonadao. That Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda have risen like the sun and moon simultaneously on the horizon of Gauda to bestow benediction on all and to destroy the darkness of ignorance. So they're like the sun and moon. So it says the material sun and moon, they destroy the darkness so that we can see these external material objects. But Gaur-Nitai, they destroy the darkness of the heart, the core of the heart. So the process is first we worship Gaur-Nitai, and then they reveal the two types of Bhagavatas. And then we serve Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, we serve the two types of Bhagavatas. And then by that service, then bhakti is aroused in the heart. It is there already, but also so by our endeavor, our purification, and by worshiping, then it comes. But then it also descends at the same time. So it is there. It is our nature. It is our nature to love Krishna. That is jivarsvarupoi Krishna nityadas. But at the same time, in order to awaken that nature, you need the divine grace. First, we need the mercy of Gaur-Nitai, mercy of the devotees, and that external thing also we need to light the fire, or to remove the covering, or to start the engine of bhakti, to start the motor going. And so then it's described, then bhakti appears. After we serve these bhagavatas, bhakti appears. And then after bhakti appears, then Krishna comes under our control. Actually, yeah, so it's there. We have it in our heart, but at the same time we require mercy to have it awakened. It's natural, it's there, and we follow the instructions of the spiritual master, and that brings us to the point where we become qualified to appreciate the mercy, or to accept the mercy that comes from the Halidini, or the spiritual potency, Bhakti Devi. And then Bhakti Devi touches our bhakti that's in our heart, and then we wake up. Of course, we wake up already. We're awake in some sense, but it's not to the point yet where we're free completely. That's also described in Bhagavatam, Vidyate Hridaya Grantis, that the chain is broken, all misgivings cut to pieces. So it's after Anartha Nirvritti, and you go up there to Bhava, Asakti Bhava, and then it is revealed. So it's both. You do require the mercy, and it is there. You need the mercy to have it awakened.
Right.
Yeah, so he gives the seed. He plants the seed. The guru plants the seed, and then we water it. We're the gardener. We have to become the gardener and water the seed. And the plant grows, and then once it reaches to Goloka, and then we can have the fruits of prema. We go to Goloka and wrap around Krishna, Radha and Krishna's lotus feet. And then the fruits come, the flowers and the fruits. And then we enjoy the fruits. And I asked one class, I said, what do you do with the fruits? And they said, we distribute the fruits. in the mood of Lord Chaitanya. And we don't just happily eat the fruits ourselves. We also distribute the fruits of Krishna prema. Yeah, so it's we do require mercy. We do require grace to awaken our own natural, spontaneous love for Krishna. Yeah, so those verses, you can look them up. They're very beautiful. Krishna Das Kaviraj, he illuminates the process of how it actually happens.
What's
Chapter 1. It's a commentary. Krishna Das Kaviraj's commentary on his second verse of Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Gaur-Nitai are appearing. And then he comments on what happens when they appear in your heart. And we have to accept, we have to worship Lord Chaitanya Nityananda in order to get the mercy of Radha and Krishna. Without them, it's not possible. And then Bhakti Devi Radharani comes. The mercy. It's bestowed on us. At the same time, we have it. We have it. But we also have to endeavor to serve the Bhagavatas. Okay, so we'll have a break. We'll come back at 12:25. And we'll finish up to verse 38 today. And then tomorrow we will hear about the gopis meeting Krishna at Kurukshetra. Today we'll hear about Nanda and Yashoda meeting Krishna after the break.